happening, New York Rangers fans, and welcome to episode 147 of the New Ice City Podcast. I'm your host, Vincent Mercogliano of the USA Today Network, and it has been a whirlwind, an absolute whirlwind of a week. Obviously, first and foremost, that is because the playoffs are underway. And I promise you that 99% of this episode will be devoted to talking about just that. But also, briefly, because I've had a lot of people ask me about it, and I know I mentioned it on last week's episode as well, I traveled well over 3,000 miles, I think it was like 3,200 miles, to make it to Puerto Rico and back so that I would both be able to attend my best friend's wedding in San Juan on Saturday and make it in time for puck drop on Sunday at Madison Square Garden. And let me tell you, I just barely made it. It was a blur, but it was also an amazing time. It was one of those pinch me kind of weekends because I was able to celebrate and be there not only for my best friend, but a lot of our good friends from pretty much our entire lives. This is a guy that I've known and grew up down the street from since I was very young. We've known each other well over 30 years and has been there for me through everything and was the best man in my wedding. And so it was obviously a thrill to be up there with him. I was actually the one of only four people, I guess five if you count the priest, on the altar of this church that dates back to the 1500s. My understanding is it is the fourth oldest church in the Americas, which is really, really cool. It's actually the same church where his parents got married 45 years ago. His mother is a Cuban refugee whose family fled to Puerto Rico many years ago. So there's a really cool backstory behind that. And on top of being there for my best friend and celebrating with him, again, having all of our friends around and being in beautiful, beautiful old San Juan, where you've got the cobblestone streets and the little narrow roads and the beautiful Caribbean beaches and the food, all the food, the seafood, the skirt steaks, the tostones, the rice and beans, just all this fantastic food that we were able to eat on this trip. It was my second time there, and I definitely didn't get to relax and enjoy it and get as much beach time as I did the previous time. This was much more go, go, go between rehearsal dinner and welcome drinks and the whole wedding day. We started at 10 a.m. and went all the way through the night, but it was an amazing, amazing time. And I had mentioned last week that one of my concerns was, at that time, we didn't know exactly when the start time for game one would be, but that I would not be able to make it back on time because I had originally scheduled a flight for later in the day on Sunday when the NHL had announced that the playoffs wouldn't start until Monday originally. So I didn't know if I was going to be able to make it. I definitely would not have been able to make it had it been a 12:30 start. Then the night before I left, the official schedule comes out and the NHL announced that it would be a 3 p.m. start for the Rangers. So that got my wheels turning a little bit. And actually on Thursday morning on the ride to the airport, I decided to call my travel agent and just take one last shot at asking, is there any way to make this happen where I can get myself back to New York by, let's say, 2 o'clock at the latest to make it for that 3 o'clock game? I knew even 2 o'clock would be pushing it. There was no direct flight options on the airline that I had originally booked on, but they did have a short layover. It was like an hour connection in Washington. So I would fly from San Juan to Washington, get that quick layover, and then catch the flight to LaGuardia and land at LaGuardia. It was scheduled right around 2 o'clock. It meant that my wife and I, who was an absolute trooper throughout this whole ordeal and rode along with me for all of it with no complaints, it meant that we would have to be up on a 7:25 a.m. flight leaving San Juan, which meant our alarm went off on Sunday morning at 5:30 a.m. after we had been out at the after party at a Puerto Rican club a couple hours earlier. So we maybe slept 2 or 3 hours that night before we had to get up and quickly shower and hop on the plane and do that whole ordeal. But we made it. We actually made it ahead of schedule. We landed at LaGuardia. I think it was like 1:38 or something like that. So luckily we landed early, which had we not landed early, I probably would have not made puck drop. She was picked up by my father, ran out and waited for the bags, thankfully, and just gave me a kiss and said, go run to the game. So I ran and jumped in a Lyft ride. Originally, I get in the Lyft and I'm like, oh man, I got plenty of time. It's like, you know, only 2 o'clock now and things are looking pretty good for me. And the traffic wasn't actually bad coming out of Queens. It was once we got into Manhattan around, you know, especially once we get off the FDR and started trying to cut across town, it was jammed up. The closer we got to the Garden, the worse the traffic was. So eventually it got to a point where we were like 3 or 4 blocks away. And I was like, you know what? I'm just getting out of this Lyft right now and making a run for it. So the Lyft I looked dropped me off at 2:58. Now, the game was scheduled for 3, but I knew, I had talked to some people that when you have these nationally televised games, they never start on time. It's always about 20 minutes late. So I knew I really had until about 3:20. So I jump out of the Lyft at 2:58, run to the Garden. I got in the elevator to head up to the top level where the press box is at 3:03. So I got there with 17 minutes to spare. Got into my seat in the press box. The teams hadn't even taken the ice yet. I did miss warmups, but I didn't miss the introductions or anything like that. And I was there barely on time. And I'll tell you, you talk about a pinch me moment. I'm sitting there. I'm thinking about all the fun that I had just had in Puerto Rico with my best friend and a lot of my other friends. I had literally, as I was doing the math in my head, been salsa dancing in Puerto Rico, like 12 or 13 hours earlier. And then there I was sitting in the Madison Square Garden press box, looking down at center ice, getting ready to cover an NHL playoff game. So that was a pretty cool moment where I was like, man, I am tired. I was drinking coffee all afternoon, doing whatever I could to keep myself not just awake, but alert and energetic and ready to do all the work that I had to do. But it was also a pretty cool moment where it was like, you know, that's a fun weekend. That's a story that I'm always going to remember. And, you know, I figured I would tell you guys the story here. Maybe you care, maybe you don't care, but it was a thrill for me, a very tiring thrill, but definitely a thrill for me. And I was able to make it back and accomplish my goal of covering game one. And now I want to shift all the focus, obviously, to that, because this podcast isn't about me. It's about the Rangers. And let's talk about what we've seen so far in these first two games. The Rangers have jumped out to a 2-0 series lead against the Washington Capitals. I want to talk individually for a little while about each game. We'll start with that game one. Now, remember, wasn't in tip-top form, but I think I remember everything pretty well, even now a few days later. Rangers come out with a 4-1 win in that game. It really felt like there was no doubt. The first period was scoreless at the end, and it felt like there was a little bit of give and take between each team. You kind of have that feeling out period, even though they're division rivals. They only play each other 4 times in the regular season. It's not like baseball or some other sports where you see your division rivals a lot more than you see the rest of the teams in the league. The NHL schedule is pretty balanced. You know, some teams you're playing twice, some teams you're playing 3 times. At the very most, you're playing a team 4 times. The Rangers had split that season series with the Capitals 2-2. But early on in the series, the teams have made some changes, especially post-trade deadline. And they're trying to see how the other team is planning to attack them. So first period comes out scoreless. But the second period, in a matter of, I believe it was 2 minutes and 6 seconds, the Rangers just went into quick strike mode. They scored 3 goals in that span, starting with, I think, a shock to everybody, probably the last guy that you would expect to score the opening goal in this playoff series for the Rangers. But it started with Matt Rempe and that fourth line, which turned out to be the story of the game for the Rangers in that game one win. They were an absolute driving force. They did not play much in the first period. I remember looking at the ice time for them. I think especially VC and Rempe were both like 2 minutes and change is what their time on ice was at the end of that first period. But the second period, you started seeing them making an impact. And we've talked about that line. When they're effective, what they're doing is they're getting pucks deep and they're hammering the opposition on the forecheck. And they're creating offensive zone time and creating extra possessions, basically just through outwilling teams to pucks. And that is what they were doing clearly in that first period. And you go and you look at that goal. They attack off the rush. They get a puck deep. They end up playing it behind the net. All 3 guys end up touching the puck, Gaudreau, VC, and Rempe. And finally, it's VC who makes a really heads-up pass. Didn't even look like he was necessarily looking. It was just a good touch pass through the front of the crease to Rempe, who was ready for it, who clearly anticipated it, and bangs the puck home to set Madison Square Garden, which, to be honest with you guys, prior to that goal, was a little quieter than I expected. It felt a little subdued, like they were kind of just waiting for something good to happen. And then Rempe gets it done for them, and then the crowd explodes. And then from there on, it was pretty much all Rangers. And that fourth line continued to be effective. They get another goal later in the game. This comes directly off of a faceoff win for Gaudreau in the offensive zone. And then Jimmy Vesey kind of slides across the top to the point and fires a wrist shot from the point that makes it through traffic and ends up going in. And the Rangers were off and running. So that game was really all about the fourth line. I thought the bottom six in particular in that game was really effective for the Rangers. The third line of Cooley, Wenberg, and Kako, even though they did not get a goal, I thought that they were really good. You could just tell that the ice was tilted in the Rangers' favor whenever they were on the ice. And I remember after the game looking up what the scoring chances were when that line was on the ice, and it was 6-0 in favor of the Rangers. That third line did not even allow a shot on goal. So defensively, they were really sound. And all around, the Rangers defensively in that game were outstanding. Both games now, they've given up like 20-something shots in each game. Not a whole lot of really high-quality scoring chances for the Capitals. And Peter Laviolette has talked about it. This is kind of what they expected. The Capitals this season have proven to not have very much offensive firepower. I believe they ranked 28th in the league in goals scored this season. The way that they won games at the end is we talked last week with Bailey Johnson about their knack for pulling out close games. I believe they had 20 wins by one goal, but also just kind of mucking things up. A lot of those greasy goals around the paint, around the net front, and just playing solid defensively. But when it comes to getting up and down the ice very fast, this is not a speedy team at all. And when it comes to offensive firepower, they just don't have a whole lot of it. Alex Ovechkin is still the best scorer that they have, but clearly he has passed his prime. And we've seen that play out in these first two games of the series. In game one, he was held without a single shot on goal. So the Rangers are doing a really good job of defending him, but they're not even necessarily putting a ton of focus on him. They are on the power play. I've noticed at times on power play situations, they kind of have one of their guys pretty much shadowing him because they know, Peter Laviolette made a comment about this the other day, that he's going to sit in that left circle and look for his one-timer because that is what's made him one of the greatest goal scorers in NHL history. But it's kind of predictable. And so the Rangers were able to defend that pretty effectively. And at 5-on-5, they don't seem too worried about him. They don't really seem too worried about anybody. Laviolette has pretty much rolled his four lines without hunting for super specific matchups all the time. Now, obviously, within that, there are certain matchups you're going to see. We've seen Mika's line play a pretty good amount against the Dylan Strome line, which also has Tom Wilson on it. But it hasn't been like every single shift, it feels like the Rangers are hell-bent on trying to get a particular matchup. Laviolette talked about this today, especially with the four centers that the Rangers have down the middle, Mika Zibanejad, Vincent Trocheck, Alex Wenberg, Barclay Gaudreau, who, by the way, all four I think have been good in this series so far. We're going to talk a little bit about them more at certain points, I'm sure. But all four of those guys are penalty killers. All four of those guys are considered defensively responsible centermen. And I think because of that, what you see is Laviolette feels like he can trust all four lines defensively. Now, are there going to be moments when he has preferences? Sure. Especially when it comes to a key faceoff situation, you know he's usually going to want Vincent Trocheck out there. But the reality is that it seems like against this Capitals team, where the Rangers have a clear advantage in pretty much every category, including talent and skill and defense, that it seems like it's fine with him if any of those lines get matched up against any of the Capitals lines, because he feels like they can at the very least hold serve and more often than not win their individual battles in those situations. So that's something that stood out to me as well. I thought the defense was really good in game one, and that propelled the Rangers to a win along with Matt Rempe giving them that huge energy boost and that fourth line really doing its job quite well. Then you move on to game two. Tighter game for sure. The Rangers end up winning by a score of 4-3, and a different game in a lot of respects because game one, all four of the Rangers' goals came at even strength, which we talked about that going into the series, 5-on-5 play, and So game one, getting all four goals at even strength was an encouraging sign. But then what we saw in game two was the special teams of the Rangers really take hold and make a major impact in that game. The Rangers get a pair of power play goals. So that was a good sign for them for sure. One of them comes from Mika Zibanejad. Another comes from Jack Roslovic with the second power play unit with just 6 seconds remaining on that power play when he scored what at the time was the go-ahead goal in the second period that made it 3-2. So the power play comes through for the Rangers. I think the power play has largely looked good so far in this series. I've liked the puck movement. I've liked the options that they're creating. I've liked the scoring chances that they're able to generate. But I think what's been even more impressive when you're talking about special teams, even though the Rangers gave up 2 power play goals to the Capitals in game 2, for the most part, the way that their penalty kill has been able to shut down the Capitals has been really impressive. Actually, I looked at it earlier today. Throughout this series, I believe, let me just double check this because I think I still have this up. I believe that the shot on goal total while the Washington Capitals power play is on the ice is actually only, here we go, 4-5 in favor of the Capitals. So the Capitals are only out shooting the Rangers by one shot on their own power play. And so what that tells you is the Rangers are doing a really good job, but what they're doing more specifically when you analyze it, they're pressuring really hard at the blue line. They're making it very difficult for the Capitals to set up in the offensive zone, to clear through the neutral zone successfully, and then get into their structure, get into their system in the offensive zone. And by creating that pressure, they're also creating a lot of turnovers. And what that turnovers are leading to are odd man rushes and rush chances going the other way. The very first power play the Capitals had in game 2, the Rangers almost scored 3 times. Barclay Gaudreau had a breakaway. He kind of mishandled the puck at the end of it, but he created a takeaway that set him off on that breakaway chance. And then Mika Zibanejad followed with back-to-back chances off the rush. So you felt like, wow, the Rangers just look so dangerous on the PK. Me and some of the other reporters were talking about it. It's almost felt like at points it was an advantage for the Rangers when they were on the PK. Now, again, eventually Washington cracked the code a little bit in that game, but the biggest backbreaker in that entire contest was late in the second period. The Rangers are leading 3-2. The Capitals get a power play, and quickly the Rangers turn that into a shorthanded goal. Mika Zibanejad undressed Alex Ovechkin in the neutral zone, stole the puck from him. It seemed like Ovechkin had no idea that Mika was even anywhere in his vicinity because he almost looked kind of lackadaisical with the way that he was handling the puck there. But Mika picks his pocket and Mika gets going the other way. Then Mika taps the puck to Chris Kreider, who gives it back to Mika. Mika gets in real deep, kind of driving hard on the net, which we've been seeing more of. And we remember talking to Steve Valiquette about Mika needing to get into those high danger areas a little more. Well, Mika comes in there. He draws the defense. Kreider comes across the crease going the other way. He draws a couple defenders with him, and that opens the slot wide open for Keandre Miller, who read the play properly, was trailing, and found himself wide open. And Mika, you know, after the game, Keandre was like, I don't know how the heck he saw me, but Mika finds him, and then Miller ends up finishing, and that gives the Rangers a 4-2 lead, and that insurance goal was critical because the Capitals ended up getting a power play goal from Tom Wilson late in the game, but the Rangers were able to hold on and win it. They were holding on for dear life at the very end. They had a 2-minute and 40-second shift from Jacob Trouba and Ryan Lindgren while they were on the ice in the final couple minutes of that game. It looked kind of crazy. It looked kind of dangerous, but they dug deep and they found a way to hold on. And so now the series will shift to Washington with the Rangers sitting on a 2-0 series lead. And I'll say this, it wouldn't surprise me at all if the Capitals find a way to take one on their home ice and send this back to MSG for game 5. But it would surprise me, it very much would surprise me if this series goes long. To me, having watched these first 2 games, and again, the Capitals made some progress. They certainly played better in game 2, but they came at the Rangers with what felt like pretty much everything they had, whether that was early in the game when they were having good possession, generating some scoring chances and kind of had the Rangers on their heels a little bit, but the Rangers weathered the storm pretty quickly, or later as the game went on, when it just felt like they were trying to bang them and intimidate them and maybe bait them into making some bad decisions, taking some penalties or what have you. And the Rangers didn't really take the bait. The Rangers did a good job of controlling that. The Rangers have pretty much responded well, I think, to the physicality and the intimidation tactics that Washington has tried so far in this series. So the Capitals tried to pull out all the stops in that game and couldn't get it done. And to me, all facets, whether you're talking about 5-on-5, whether you're talking about power play, which we just went over, penalty kill, which we just went over, and the way that the Rangers are really effectively pressuring the Capitals up at the blue line and making it hard for them to get set up or have any success with their power play. And then you go down goaltending, even though Charlie Lindgren was a big storyline coming into this series because of how well he was playing. It's still clear that the Rangers have the best goalie in this series in Igor Shesterkin. Speed. We've talked about the Rangers maybe having their hands full with some of the faster teams in the league, but the Capitals are not that. The Rangers have the speed advantage in this series. I think that's been pretty clear so far. And even when we talk about the physicality, yes, the Capitals are a big, heavy, chippy team. They're trying to get under the Rangers' skin. They have guys like Tom Wilson who are clearly going to be looking to make some big momentum-altering hits out there. But actually, the Rangers have out-hit the Capitals in both games so far in this series. Obviously, Rempe has something to do with that, but I think you're seeing a lot of guys on this Rangers team who are not afraid to step it up in physical situations, whether it's defensemen like Trouba and Schneider and Lindgren. Even I think Miller has stepped up his physicality so far in this series. Or some of the forwards, like Barclay Gaudreau has been really effective in that regard. I think Vincent Trocheck has absolutely been a thorn in the Capitals side so far. So the Rangers, they've shown that they can handle the muscle. They can handle a team like the Capitals who's going to try to push them around a little bit. And I think what that all adds up to is top to bottom, the Rangers have the better team in this series. And to me, it goes back to the conversation that we were having for weeks leading up to the playoffs, where we talked about why it was important to get the number one seed, why the Rangers would want the number one seed. What they have now is just what they wanted. They have a team that is very beatable. The Eastern Conference has some really good teams at the top. I think there's six teams that could legitimately win this conference. And I even think the Islanders are a legitimate step above the Capitals, although the Islanders are having their own problems right now in their series against the Hurricanes. But the Rangers wanted to avoid one of those bad matchups. And they were able to do that by securing the President's Trophy, securing the number one seed, and getting a team like the Capitals, which, truth be told, the reality is of the 16 teams that made the playoffs in the NHL, the Capitals are the worst among them. Negative 37 goal differential during the regular season, the aging veterans, the young guys who are still unproven, the lack of offensive firepower, all the different stuff that we've talked about. This is a very beatable team. And so the Rangers got what they earned, which was the most favorable first round matchup. And now the ideal scenario for them is going to be ending this one in 4 or 5 games and getting some much needed rest, saving some bullets for what is sure to be some tougher tests to come. We talked about those grueling 7-game series that they had in each of the first 2 rounds back in that run in 2022 and the toll that that took on them. Well, they have a chance right now, knowing that whatever's going to come in the next series or even beyond that is probably going to be a lot more grueling. They have a chance right now to go into that next series pretty well rested. And I think that that would be a really advantageous thing for them. So we'll see how it's going to play out. It could, I guess, change. The momentum could change in a game. And then maybe we're talking differently about the Capitals. But my read on the situation so far is that the Rangers are very much in control of this series. And my prediction going into the series of Rangers winning in 5, I feel pretty good about that as I'm sitting here today on Wednesday. So because we're still in the middle of the series, we won't have any guests today. I want to just kind of get some reaction out to you guys now that they've played 2 games and before I make my trip to Washington tomorrow. So what I'm going to do now, I asked you guys to submit your questions this week. I'm going to try to get through a bunch of them, pretty much as many as I can before my son wakes up from his nap, because I didn't put him in daycare today. Haven't really got to spend a lot of time with him recently. So I wanted to get some daddy-son time in today. But now that he's been down for a nap, it's podcast time. So I'm going to shift gears quickly right now. We're going to get into your Twitter questions, and I'll try to answer at least a handful of them while I have a little peace and quiet around the house. So we'll be right back with this week's set of questions. All right, let's dive right in. I noticed that there were a handful of questions about the officiating so far in the series, which has kind of become a hot topic. The first one I see here comes from Big Lou, who wrote, "How much do you think the questionable officiating has affected the flow of the first two games? Questionable penalty calls / non-calls, missed called icings, tossing players off the face-off circle on every draw, etc." You know, I do think, and I've tweeted about this and I've written about this, that the officiating has been suspect so far in this series for sure. There have been, in my opinion, some ticky-tacky calls that just felt like, you know, this is a playoff game. Aren't we supposed to be letting these guys play? You know, we don't want to make penalties and referees the stories in these kind of games. Now, I'm not saying you should call it entirely differently than you do in the regular season, but I also think there does seem to be or need to be some understanding of the situation, some understanding that these guys are going to be scratching and clawing and battling for every inch they can get. And unless it's something clear and obvious, it probably shouldn't be called. So that has been one side of the coin. And then on the other side of the coin, there's been some stuff that's pretty clearly missed. I mean, you look at game two, Mika Zibanejad gets clearly tripped, I thought, in the first period and no call. Artemi Panarin takes a high stick from TJ Oshie at some point in that game and they let it slide. You also have Will Cooley. Now, maybe it was accidental, but you did have him kind of give Tom Wilson a little bit of a shot below the belt before a face-off, which I think on the Capitals side, you could say, hey, what the heck's going on there? That should be something. I mean, there have definitely been, I think, some, whether you're talking about missed calls or whether you're talking about calls that have you shaking your head, there's been both of that. So for sure, I don't think this has been the best officiated series that I've seen. But I'll also say this, as far as how much of an effect it's having on the series, the game flow, yes. You know, the players will tell you when there's a lot of penalties, you don't really get in your rhythm as much 5-on-5. Obviously, it costs certain players ice time. We were talking to Peter Laviolette today about Jack Roslovic getting under 10 minutes in game two, even though he scored that goal. And Laviolette was pretty quick to defend him and say, listen, it's not anything against him. It's just when we're spending that much time on special teams, certain guys are going to get the short end of the stick. So to that extent, there's some truth to what you're asking here, Lou. But I would say that as far as whether it's affected the outcome of these games, I don't necessarily feel like it has because it's been pretty even. You look at game two, 11 penalties called in that game. It was 6 power plays for the Rangers, 5 power plays for the Capitals. So I do think it's been pretty even. I think there's been missed calls both ways. I think there's been questionable calls both ways. So I don't feel like, you know, I know for fans, a lot of times you look at this and you say, oh, that referee's out to get me, or they hate the Rangers, or the league hates the Rangers, or whatever narratives you want to put out there. I don't see it that way at all. I just see referees who make mistakes, and sometimes the mistake hurts your team. Sometimes the mistake helps your team. And so that's kind of my read on the situation. Would I like to see them improve and get more of these calls right? Absolutely. But do I feel like it's been egregiously against one team or the other so far? No, I do not. All right, let's keep going. I don't want to talk about the refs too much. Zando Blando here wrote, there has been a lot of chatter about who comes out if Phil returns. Most of the discourse has been around Roslovic and Rempe, but do you think Kako is a candidate? Not playing power play or penalty kill right now, and while he's played consistently well 5-on-5, there haven't been a lot of points to show for it. No, I do not think that Kako is in jeopardy of losing his spot. In fact, I think Kako is been one of the better players for the Rangers so far in this series. As you said, he doesn't have any points to show for it right now, but I believe that if you look at a lot of the underlying numbers, like expected goal rates and Corsi and things like that, he actually grades out as the best Rangers forward so far in this series. I touched on it earlier. That line has been really effective, I think, for the Rangers. Kako, to me, seems like he's playing loose. He's playing free. I had this conversation with him the other day that kind of stood out to me, and I wrote about this for my pregame story on Tuesday, which you guys can go check out at loha.com/sports/Rangers if you haven't had a chance yet. But to me, I think there were a lot of times during the season when he was down on himself. He was looking at his stat line, finished with only 19 points in, I think, 60 games played this season. Clearly, underwhelming statistical season for him. The production was not there the way that he wanted it to be. And trust me, he gets down on himself about that at times. He worries about the ice time, maybe even you could argue a little bit too much sometimes when he gets dropped down into the bottom six. Like, I think that there are some things that go on there where it affects his play when he's not feeling confident in himself in that moment. But what I've sensed from him recently is he's saying, you know what, for us to have success in these playoffs, I'm going to need to be a part of it. It might not be as big of a role as I want, but we talked about this the other day. This is a chance for him to have a clean slate, a fresh start. Whatever happened in the regular season will be forgotten if he plays well in these playoffs. And to me, he's engaging physically. He is entering into puck battles. He's playing with some speed. He's defending really hard. He's holding the puck and creating in the offensive zone. He had a great pass early in game two. I'm trying to remember who he set up, but he went behind the net, won a battle along the boards, and then without even looking, just dished a really quick pass to the front of the net. I'm forgetting off the top of my head who he set up, but it was a really nice pass, a really nice scoring chance there for the Rangers. So I've noticed him quite a bit in this series. I don't think there's any chance that he would be the guy who comes out of this lineup. For me, I do think that it's almost certainly going to be Rempe. I know that that's not going to be a popular opinion, and it might not happen anytime soon. I want to make this clear as well. And I wrote a story about Hedl that went up on all the websites on Wednesday as well. So that's another one you guys should check out if you get a chance. I've tried to do a little reporting around what is the status with Hedl, because he's been practicing now for almost 2 weeks with the team. He looks like he's playing pretty fast out there. He's participating in every drill. He certainly looks to me like he's ramping up and getting closer. And what I've been told now by multiple people is that the Rangers do definitely view him as an option for them at some point in these playoffs. And I was specifically told that he's getting very close to a point where they think that that would be feasible if they decide to go down that path. But the other thing that I think needs to be considered in this equation is, A, the delicacy of the situation, which we've talked about at length when it comes to head injuries and everything that he's been through. The last thing that anybody wants to see right now is another setback, another hit that has a bad effect on him and kind of sets him back, sends him back to square one, maybe even affects the outlook for the rest of his career or the outlook going into next season. Nobody wants to see that. So obviously everybody is on guard about that. And then the other thing is that as long as the Rangers are winning and playing well, there's not really a need to shake things up or rush him back. And I don't necessarily think it would be a rush job at this point because he's been medically cleared. But by the same token, I think, and Peter Laviolette touched on this the other day as well, every practice that he gets under his belt, every time he gets to touch the puck, every time he gets another day to build up his stamina, every time he gets another day to just get a feel for whatever it is they're working on that day in practice. Laviolette called it game-like situations. He's going to gain a little more comfort with each passing day. So probably the longer you wait, the better positioned he's going to be to hit the ground running, because he has not played in a game since November 2nd. It has been a very long time for him. So to throw him into the playoff fire, that's going to be a major adjustment. And certainly it's going to come with some nerves and all kinds of stuff like that as well. So I think that that is an element of that they're trying to consider as well. At what point does it make sense to make that move? And ideally, given the way that this series is going, I don't think the Rangers are going to have to go down that road in this series. I think quite clearly they can beat the Washington Capitals probably in not that long of a time. We've talked about 4 or 5 games without needing to reach into that basket and pull Hedl out of it and put him at risk right now, especially against a team that is trying to muck things up, a team that's trying to be physical and chippy to extend their season, to extend their playoff lives here. So, you know, I don't know if I'd want it to be playing against a team that's absolutely desperate right now, playing against a team that has some big, heavy guys who might be out there looking to send a message. Is it possible for the next round that they would do it against, let's say, the Carolina Hurricanes, clean slate, game one, ready to go? I think that could be on the table. But I also think it's possible that maybe it would be either the result of an injury when you need someone to step up and fill a hole, or the result of a game or two not going the way that the Rangers like, especially offensively, which we know is an area where Hedl can help, and that they might put him in to kind of provide a spark for the entire group in a situation like that. So I'm sure all of these things are being discussed, what kind of timing makes the most sense for them, but especially for him. And so I don't have a definitive answer for you as to exactly when he would come back, but I do think that it is absolutely on the table from what I've heard from multiple people now that it could happen at some point in these playoffs. So it's going to be really, really interesting to see how they play this out. But again, if this series continues to go the way that it's going, I don't see any need to do it right now. And as long as that keeps happening, then I think the Rangers will keep rolling with Rempe. I think what he did in game one locked up his spot for now, but if and when Hedl does come back, I think his lineup spot would very much be in jeopardy. We've talked about this before. I think the most logical way to ease Hedl back in would be put him on the third line and then bump Rempe off the fourth line and move. You could move Wennberg down and you could have a fourth line with Wennberg and Gaudreau, which would then allow Gaudreau to play some wing. And then you would have a third line of Cooley, Hedl, and Kako. Or somebody said this to me the other day too, and it makes some sense. Maybe the Rangers don't want Hedl taking a ton of faceoffs right off the bat. He hasn't traditionally been a really good faceoff guy. So you could also maybe have Hedl play the wing on the third line with Wennberg and Kako, and then build a fourth line of Cooley, Gaudreau, and Vesey. And as much as we love watching Rempe play, and trust me, it's a lot of fun to watch him play, I do think that a fourth line that had either Wennberg or Cooley instead of Rempe would probably get more ice time. I think that's a line that probably would have a little more trust defensively from Peter Laviolette, and you might see all four lines rolling a little bit more equally if that was the case. And then if it comes to a point in a series where you feel like, hey, we need an energy jolt, we need the physicality that Rempe brings, you could always stick him back in there. But I would think that he would probably be the first guy to come out. And you touched on, I think, what the other option here is, and that would be Roslovic. It's been interesting with him because he did score a goal in game two. That wrist shot that he had on the end of that power play, he fit it into a little keyhole, a little tight window right above Charlie Lindbergh's left shoulder. I'm rattling off too many names now, and maybe the lack of sleep from Puerto Rico is catching up to me here. But that window that he fitted in over Charlie Lindgren's left shoulder was just an absolutely nasty shot. So that was obviously a great sign to see. And I think there have been little moments where you notice him. I still think overall I'd like to see more out of him. And the overall ice time is down. Played, I think, 9.5 minutes in game two. But Laviolette talked about that and said it was because of the special teams usage and Roslovic's lack of special teams usage that led to that. But I do think that there could come a scenario where if the first line isn't going the way that you want them to go, that maybe they do consider Hedl moving up there. But right now, I think Zibanejad's playing really well. I think the first line's had a pretty solid impact through these first two games. And I think that the right plan of action wouldn't be to throw Hedl into a really prominent role. I think a bottom six spot to ease him in a little bit more makes a little more sense. So we'll see if and when it happens. But again, I do think that there's a very real possibility it could happen at some point. All right, let's get to another question here, which comes from Eric Talvey, who wrote, outside of the PK, we don't see Lindgren-Truba paired on the blue line. How, why did that happen in the final 3 minutes of game two? Given the Rangers were hemmed in their zone for those final 3 minutes, is this something you see Lavi going back to? I do think that Laviolette likes the Lindgren-Truba pair on the PK. He's used that for a good chunk of the season, if not all the season. I don't know exactly how those two ended up on the ice together late in the game. I actually asked Laviolette today if there's anything wrong with Adam Fox, because he didn't play at all in the last 5 minutes of game two, but Laviolette said no, had nothing to do with any health issues. It was just because that pair got hemmed in, and everybody who was on the ice at that point got hemmed in for that last 2 minute and 40 second shift, and he wasn't able to get Fox back out there. So that was his explanation for that. It could have been strategic too. I didn't ask him specifically why he had that pair on the ice at that stage. But again, I think it comes back to that PK kind of mindset. The Capitals had pulled their goalie. So it's 6-on-5. The Rangers are down a skater. And you know, on the PK, they like Trouba and Lindgren together. So my guess would be the reason that they had them out there in that situation is because they were kind of treating it like a PK. And usually on a PK, Trouba and Lindgren are the first two defensemen over the board. So I wouldn't make too much or think too deep into that situation. All right. Next question comes from Alex Dudley, who wrote, do you think Lavi plays Rempe in Washington? Yes, I absolutely do. Especially with some things heating up right now, the Panarin-Oshie beef and all that, you certainly want to make sure that nobody's coming after Panarin and that if they do try that, you have an answer. I'm usually not a big proponent of thinking that it makes a big difference having this so-called deterrent in your lineup. But I do think that when it comes to protecting your very best player, that you're probably going to want your best fighter in the lineup if there's a chance that the other team is going to be gunning for him. And we've also seen Rempe have a positive impact in these first two games. So yes, I do think that Rempe will play in game 3 on Friday in Washington. All right, I see more Hedl stuff. I think we pretty much addressed all of the Hedl options. The lineup slot, what I'm hearing about when he may come back, the progress he's making, all that. So yes, well, actually, a lot of these questions are about Hedl. Tell Vinny Jr. the Rangers fans love him. He loves you guys too. He is so into hockey right now. It's incredible. He, for one, I think he's finally starting to wrap his mind around the fact that I don't play. I think for a long time, he really thought that I played. And I would tell him, you know, Daddy writes about it. Daddy does this. I don't play. I just report on it. And he wasn't quite clear on what that meant. I think he's figured it out now. And one of the reasons is he's figured out that if we turn on SNY in the morning, he sees Daddy on TV. So I think that's registered to him that like Daddy doesn't play, Daddy talks about it. So it's funny how much he asks for hockey. And he's been telling everybody because like a lot of our family members and stuff like that are starting to ask him about which sports he wants to play. We're thinking about T-ball, we're thinking about soccer and a few other things that kids when they're 3 or 4 years old get into. But he keeps telling everybody he wants to play hockey, which is fun. I'm really excited that he's excited about that possibility, but also my wallet might not be a huge fan of that from what I understand from talking to other hockey parents, but we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But he loves you guys too. I appreciate that, Matt. Let's see what else we got here. Marcus Fennell wrote, I know the Rangers were up 2-0 last year, but this one feels very different. Would you agree? Yes, Marcus, I am absolutely on the same page with you. Now this feels very different. That New Jersey team last year was dangerous, and I do not feel like the Capitals look like a very dangerous team to me right now. Ned Schnebly, I hope I'm saying that right, Ned. Do you think Roslovic's game has been a bit overheated and overanalyzed? With all the hype around Hedl, everyone wants him gone. He's been solid the last 4 games. Feel like people will take anyone out just to make sure Rempe's in. Whether that's right or wrong, Rempe has been solid too, but wants to know what I think about Roslovic. Listen, I agree that he's been better in the last 4 games, but I do feel that the majority of the time the Rangers have had him, it's been pretty underwhelming. I think there's been flashes, but not enough consistency, which is exactly what the MO on him was when the Rangers got him. You remember when we had Brian Hedger, who covers the Columbus Blue Jackets on the podcast. I know I've written about this as well. It just seems like it's not every shift. It's not every game. It's not as often as you would like it to be. And so I do still have questions, but again, pulling out a shot like he pulled in game 2, or I did think that the last couple of games of the regular season, he finished up pretty well. There have been some signs, and I do think the Rangers are going to keep rolling with him for now. I think there's a better chance of Rempe coming out of the lineup, as we just talked about, than Roslovic, at least in this very moment. But I do think that there are signs that maybe Peter Laviolette isn't overly thrilled with him either. Now, he talks about the special teams usage, and that's why when the Rangers are in games that have a lot of penalties, Roslovic's ice time goes down. Obviously, that makes sense. I'm not disagreeing with that. But I also do think that it's been pretty clear that if it comes down to crunch time, Roslovic is not one of the guys that Laviolette is looking to get out there. Whether they're looking for offense or they're looking to defend a lead, it seems like of the top six forwards, five of them are always going to play in late game situations. Roslovic, not so much. So I don't feel like his spot on the top line is super secure. I don't feel like I've been overly impressed by what I've seen from him, but we're going to see if maybe he can build on what has been a pretty solid last four games for him, even though, again, he hasn't played really heavy minutes in any of those games, especially the last couple since the playoffs started. It seems like that third line, even, those guys are ending up with more ice time in a lot of these games than Roslovic is. So something to monitor. But yeah, I don't think he absolutely stinks. I don't think that he needs to get out of the lineup immediately, like maybe some of the opinions that are out there right now. But I also do think that there are some reasons to look at it and say, well, I'm not entirely sold on the way that this is working either. All right, let's see if we can get a couple more in here. We keep going with Hedl. Hedl is by far the most popular topic of the week. Wide Left wants to know, are you looking forward to trying food on Long Island if the Isles win? Listen, I'm not feeling great about the Isles' chances right now, I have to tell you, although they are playing, I believe, tonight. So maybe by the time this podcast comes out, that will change or I will feel a little bit differently. But trust me, I went to Hofstra. So if I'm on Long Island, I got a lot of places I like to eat. That's definitely one of my favorite parts about those Islander games. So that would be something to look forward to if it gets there. But right now I'm feeling a little bit more like I'm likely to be eating Carolina barbecue. All right, Tone wants to know, the change up of Miller Trouba and Gustafson Schneider to Miller Schneider and Gus Trouba has definitely helped solidify the defense. Thoughts? Yes, Tone, and I got to give Peter Laviolette credit on this because I know that we had talked about this before on previous episodes when people were asking me when Trouba first came back from that injury, because we all felt like Miller and Schneider looked pretty good together, whether or not Laviolette would consider sticking with that, which would have meant moving Trouba down to that bottom pair with Gustafson in all likelihood. And I told you guys that I did not think he would do it, that I thought there was some merit to that conversation, but realistically, I didn't think it was something the Rangers were going to do. Well, I've been, I guess you could say, pleasantly surprised or whatever you want to call it, but I would say that it has been, I think, a pretty bold move and a move that seems to be working out pretty well for the Rangers, that with just two games to go in the regular season, Laviolette said, you know what? I think we're going to be better off this way. It's a very late stage for us to be making this switch, but I'm going to do it anyway. And so far, I think it's looked really good because I do think that through the first two games of this series, Miller and Schneider have been the Rangers' best D pair. To me, that has been the case in both games. I thought especially in game two, like I was looking at some of the underlying numbers after that game, the Fox-Lindgren pair actually was hemmed in their own zone a lot in that game. The shot share when they were on the ice was not very good. Trouba Gustafson were pretty solid, pretty even when they were on the ice. But the Miller-Schneider pair, they seem to be getting a lot of the toughest defensive assignments. They seem to be holding up pretty well. Miller, to me, has been, I think, the Rangers' best defenseman so far through two games of this series. Now, there's a long way to go, but even Spencer Carberry, the Washington Capitals coach, made a point of saying this pregame on Tuesday that Miller to him has been just this guy who's incredibly tough for them to beat in the defensive zone because of the reach, because of the skating, because of the size, because of all the physical athletic attributes that we talk about with him all the time. And it just seems like he's been swallowing them up. We have not seen him make very many mistakes. I do not believe, at least not off the top of my head that I can remember, that he has a giveaway so far in this series. So those turnovers, those occasional defensive lapses, whether it's misplaying the puck or misplaying the man, I don't think we've seen any of that from him so far in this series. And obviously, he steps up for a huge shorthanded goal in game two, which turns out to be the winning goal for the Rangers. So Keandre looks like he's on top of his game right now. And how much does that have to do with him playing with Schneider, who I also think has been pretty solid so far in this series? Some, I'm sure, you know, I guess you can't completely discount the partner thing. It obviously has something to do with it. But I also just think that Keandre, when he's at his best, you see him being super assertive out there and just swallowing people up and using all those physical attributes in the right way, in a smart way, just being decisive, knowing exactly what he wants to do on the ice and executing it because he can do things at a higher level than a lot of other guys. That, to me, is when he's at his best. And we've seen him do that at times in the past with whoever the partner was. A lot of times it was Trouba. It did seem like he was doing more of that when he was with Schneider earlier this season. And so Laviolette recognized that, and Laviolette made the change at a time when I did not think he was going to do it. So I do think the D pairs have been pretty solid. Again, I think Fox Lindgren had a not so great game in game two. So you'd like to see them improve a little bit. I think Trouba and Gustafsson have been mostly pretty solid. Gustafsson had a pair of assists in game two. So offensively, he was making some things happen. I still do think there are defensive moments with him where I'm like, oh man, you know, looks like he could be a little vulnerable there. But the Miller-Schneider pair to me has been the Rangers' best so far in that series. That's a credit to them first and foremost, but you also got to give some credit to the coach for having the gall to put them back together when there were only two games left in the regular season. So I do think that that's worked out pretty well for the Rangers. And if they can keep Keandre playing at this level throughout the playoffs, that's going to be a huge thing for them. All right. Let's see. I might do one or two more here. I see a couple questions in here about Mika. And I'll say this. I just mentioned that Keandre Miller, I think, has been the Rangers' best defenseman so far in the series. I think you could argue that Mika Zibanejad has been their best skater. So that's another really good sign for the Rangers. We've obviously talked a lot about Artemi Panarin and all the pressure and all the eyeballs that are going to be on him in these playoffs, given the disappointment and the struggles that he had the last couple playoffs, but especially last year. And he's had moments. Obviously, he had a goal in game one, so that was good to see. And there are some things to like about the way that he's playing right now, but I still don't think it's been as dominant as it looked for most of the regular season. So want to see a little bit more from him. But Mika took some heat during this regular season, and rightfully so. His 5-on-5 scoring was absolutely down, absolutely not where you expect it to be. Still, I think all-around impact defensively, PK, power play, all the different things that he does, you know, you have to work that into any conversation you have about him because he is an excellent all-around player who the Rangers ask to literally do everything for them. So that's part of this as well. But so far, Mika has just been, you talk about assertive. He looks like he is coming up and down the ice with such purpose, getting into those high danger areas, creating takeaways. He led the Rangers. I think he led actually both teams in takeaways in game two, including that takeaway on Ovechkin that led to the shorthanded goal. He is absolutely hunting on the penalty kill right now. He's making a big difference at 5-on-5, I believe. And he also scores a power play goal in game two. So the Mika Zibanejad you're seeing right now is the Mika Zibanejad that the Rangers need. I would also give some stick taps to Vincent Trocheck, who the 1-2 punch of him and Mika Zibanejad down the middle. I mean, if Mika's been their best skater in the series, Miller, Trocheck are probably in the top three, I would say. Those are probably be the guys that have stood out to me the most so far in the series. Trocheck goes 17 for, I think it was 25 in game two on faceoffs. The Rangers get a goal directly off of his faceoff in that game where he wins the faceoff, kicks the puck back to Erik Gustafsson, and then charges the net and redirects the pass in for his first goal of this series. So Trocheck has been a major difference maker, and he's been near the top of the list of the guys who are kind of snapping back and agitating the Capitals. When the Capitals are trying to come after the Rangers, Trocheck is always the guy that seems to be sticking his nose in there to come right back at them. So Zibanejad, Trocheck, Miller, really impressed with the way that those guys have started this series. I mentioned Kako. I think he's off to a pretty good start. Alexis Lafreniere is a guy that I think is off to a good start in this series. He has 3 assists. I think he's tied with Zibanejad and Trocheck for most points for any Rangers so far in this series. And the last guy that I'll mention that I think is off to a good start in this series, and this is another guy that's taken a lot of heat from Rangers fans, not just this season, but the last couple seasons, is Barclay Gaudreau. The penalty kill, he has been one of the foremost guys making a difference out there. He had a pair of assists in game one when we talked about the fourth line making such a big difference. And his game It just seems to play up at this time of year. I agree that it's underwhelming in the regular season. I agree that there are legitimate concerns about the contract and all that moving forward. And I did not think that he had a good year this year. But the last couple games, you're seeing why the Rangers value this guy. And he has been an important player for them through the first two games of this series because of all the gritty things that he does, because of the impact that that fourth line is making, and because of what he does on the penalty kill. So Gaudreau is another guy that I would throw into those that bucket of guys that have played well through these first couple games and I think are making a really positive impact for the Rangers. There's certainly guys you could get more out of. Panarin, we talked about Fox and Lindgren and that pair not having a great night on game two. There are certainly guys that you could look at and say, okay, if they get these guys going, then they're really going to be in good shape. Chris Kreider is another one. But so far, so good. Definitely more positive than negative so far for the Rangers in this series. And again, I think they have a chance to end it quickly if this continues. So with that, we are going to say goodbye for this week's episode. Tried to get as many of your questions as I could. I just didn't want to read like 10 questions about Philip Hedel there. So I ended up cutting it off at a certain point, which is good. I still haven't heard my son yet, but I anticipate I'm going to probably have to get him up soon. Looking forward to spending the rest of the day with him before Thursday practice in New York, and then we'll be traveling to Washington, D.C. So I will have you guys covered throughout the weekend for games 3 and 4. And then we'll be back next week with another episode. I might wait till the end of game 5 to record the next episode just to see where we're at. Have the Rangers closed out the series yet, or have the Capitals extended it longer than maybe at this moment we expect them to? So we will wait and see before we decide on exactly what next week's episode will look like. But for sure, there will be an episode at some point. So I look forward to that. Until then, everybody take care of yourselves. Enjoy the playoffs. Enjoy this time of year. It's so much fun right now, whether you're into the NHL playoffs, the NBA playoffs, the beginning of baseball season. A lot of cool sports stuff going on right now. So buckle up and have a great rest of your week.